This week on the show, we get started with what else? The NFL Conference Championship games. Mike Zago joins us to see which coaches around the country are sitting on the hot seat, and Grayson Allen, that pesky little kid's back in the news again. Why? We'll get into it. To be announced starts right now. Hey, everybody. Welcome in to be announced. I am Alex Barth, joined again by Jimmy Young. Mike Zago coming up later. Jimmy, it's that time of year again, 2 weeks away from the Super Bowl. Conference championship games, though, a little disappointing.
You know, in the old days, we used to love conference championship Sunday because you were pretty much guaranteed two really good games. I think there is such a gap between the two winners of this game and the rest of the league and how they play, especially this year, that's one of the reasons why I want to say two duds, because they're playing for a spot in the Super Bowl. And these were the last four teams that remained. But as far as excitement going down to the wire, last minute possession, all that neat stuff, the college football championship was far more exciting.
Although, remember, the semifinals for the college football championship were both kind of snoozers as well.
That's right.
We'll save the previews of the Super Bowl for next week, so make sure to tune in to be announced. Listen to the rest of this one, but then next week, make sure you come back to hear what we think about Patriots-Falcons. But we'll start over in the NFC. We'll go chronologically. I'll cold take myself. I took the Packers. I thought that game was going to look the other way, but Matty Ice lived up to his nickname. He really should be the MVP.
He is going to be the MVP. I don't think there's any doubt now. And, you know, it's funny, in the East, unless you watch Red Zone, you know, religiously, you don't see the Atlanta Falcons. And they were the greatest show on turf part two.
They really are.
Yeah.
They really
and
are.
Julio Jones is just, you know, they're talking about how Antonio Brown might be the best wide receiver in the league. How can you say that when you've got Julio
because
Jones?
It's what Antonio Brown does after the catch.
Yeah, I'm
and
with
you
it.
Can deny him better than you can deny Julio Jones. Julio Jones is your stereotypical Terrell Owens diva wide receiver. He's going to make incredible catches, but he doesn't want to get hit. You get up in his face and he's going to shudder. And that's kind of why I think, look, the Falcons outplayed the Packers. They deserve to be in the Super Bowl 100%. I am not sold that this Falcons offense is as good as it looked on Sunday. The Packers were using pretty much their backup secondary.
And their practice squad.
Their starting secondary is terrible to begin with.
Their practice squad.
They were trying to man up Julio Jones down the field. It was a walkthrough for the Falcons. That's really all it was. It was the Saturday afternoon walkthrough.
And the thing that frustrated me the most was the Packers, the real Packers, weren't healthy enough to play in this game.
Right.
They were just decimated by injuries. And it goes back to, we've actually talked about it, I think even last week. Luck plays a huge role in the NFL, especially at the end of the season. Because if you are healthy, I mean, that's a bonus. And look at the Patriots. They didn't even bring out Deion Lewis until the playoffs for the most part.
Meanwhile, and this goes into my theme with this game and with the whole weekend was, did these two teams win the games or did their opponents lose them?
No, they and both won the game.
So with the Falcons, I don't say that as confidently. Let's look at defensively. How do you think they handled Aaron Rodgers? The Falcons' game plan.
You can't handle Aaron Rodgers, okay? And who's the guy who fumbled on the way into the end?
Ripkowski, Ripnarowski.
Changed the whole tenure of that game. And it's one of the things that I think the Patriots do real well, which is play with a lead. Score first, control the line of scrimmage, control the clock, and play with a lead. And the Falcons were able to do it. The Packers could have done it if they had scored at that point. It would have been a 10-7 game, and of course, that would have changed things.
And you had the missed field goal. Could easily be 10-10 at that point. Yep. And that goes back to my point of, did the Falcons really come out and dominate this game? You have the costly fumble on the goal line, and really what should have been a safety. They got some help with that call right there. The missed field goal could have been a 10-10 game. Any team's going to look good when you spot them a 10-0, a 14-0 lead.
Yeah, and you still have to get it. And I think Atlanta really impressed me, really, because it's probably the first time I've seen them play from start to finish an entire game. And I think they're the whole package. I do. Are they going to get beat? Probably. But they are still the whole package, and it will be a very interesting betting line and where the action is and all this stuff, because I think smart money is going to be on the Patriots, because it just happens.
They've been there,
done that how many times?
I will say this. The Falcons' game plan defensively against Rodgers, I liked, and it may work against Brady. Rodgers is not going to check out of the blitz. He's going to stand in there and face it and try to beat it with his legs. Because the Falcons have Vic Beasley, the NFL leader in sacks this year, they have Dwight Freeney still kicking around. We're up for another Patriots-Dwight Freeney playoff matchup, which I'm very excited about as a traditionalist. But they made Aaron Rodgers make the plays. They said, run around all you want. We'll make you do it. And he couldn't do it. The pass rush was too strong. We know Brady's weakness is getting knocked around. Now, not to get ahead of ourselves with the other game, if he can counter that blitz before the snap, the Falcons are in trouble. But I liked what the Falcons seem to have the first plan. They didn't stop Rodgers, but the first plan in a couple weeks that's really contained him.
Well, and did they really contain him, Alex, or did they contain the wide receivers and lock them down? Because the Packers wide receivers who are beat to heck, really.
I cannot believe Jordy Nelson played.
Isn't Novocaine a wonderful drug? I just want to say, not to mention a flak jacket and what have you. And he is a gamer. And actually, he's one of my more favorite Packer guys because he is a gamer.
Yeah. Oh, great to watch.
But nobody else really could get any separation at all.
But here's the thing.
You can have the greatest quarterback of all time, but unless he's going to run the ball in or throw it up and catch it himself, he can't beat a team.
But Rodgers has won with this same group offensively for the last two or three weeks.
He
beat a very good Packers team with this group.
He is a Packers.
Not Packers. Sorry. He beat a very...
Cowboys.
Right. That's he beat a very good Cowboys team.
I think somebody is rubbing
last
off
week,
on you, by the way.
What'd you say? You called Brett Favre last week. So.
And I did it again at tennis when I was talking to some guys. They wanted to know about the game. Nah, you know what? That Brett Favre, he's a pretty good quarterback.
He is. You're not wrong.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's Aaron Rodgers, yeah. God, at least I was consistent.
He beat the Cowboys with the same group. And I would argue the Cowboys' defense is better than the Falcons' defense. Vic Beasley is probably better than anybody the Cowboys have. But as a unit, I would take the Cowboys over the Falcons.
I actually thought the Cowboys were going to win or get to the Super Bowl along with the Patriots. But I changed that as soon as, of course, the Packers beat the Cowboys. And I thought, you know what? And I think Brett again.
There you go.
There he goes again. It's that damn quarterback from Green Bay that drove me crazy for all those years. Aaron Rodgers is still an amazing. I'll tell you, some of the throws he made, running to his left and throwing with his right, running to his right and flinging it. He's a beautiful quarterback to watch because he has all the skills.
And you know what's so funny about it? You talk to people who know the game, his mechanics are flawed.
No, absolutely.
But he makes it, and it's one thing for a guy like Drew Brees, who's 6 feet, who has to have different mechanics. Rodgers is a quarterback's body. He has these, who's the pitcher? Louis Tino used to turn around. And he was still a pretty good pitcher. It wasn't an Aaron Rodgers type pitcher, but that's what I really appreciate about Aaron Rodgers. His mechanics are, frankly, they're terrible. And he's gone through his whole career without them being correct, and look where he is now.
What's the most important skill for a quarterback to have?
Drive.
See, I disagree. It's reading a defense. It's making the right call at the line of scrimmage.
Well, speaking of making the right call at the line of scrimmage, with a lot of Patriots games.
That was a good segue. We have some chemistry. You know, we've worked together before.
Yeah, but it kind of ruins it if you mention it.
That's all right. No, it doesn't ruin it at all. I'm an open book. You know that.
Speaking of reading the line of scrimmage, taking a look at the Patriots-Steelers game, and I think I said this last week. I know I said it last week a lot of times. I don't know if I said it on this show. The first big play of the game was going to decide Patriots-Steelers. It was going to be an early turnover, big early pass. Some big play was going to decide that game early. And when Brady called out that that Jordan audible, boy, everybody stood up.
And they took the ball. They won the toss and
took the ball.
And
I heard something.
And I'll tell you what, Bill Belichick, say what you want about the guy. We all know that he's brilliant and all this. Sure enough, when he was asked in his press conference, so why'd you change? Usually when you win the toss, there's certain circumstances where we want the ball. And then asked again about that on the afternoon. He's like, yeah, certain circumstances where you want the ball. Well, the next question, of course, would have been, well, what are the circumstances?
But they know they're not going to get out of them. You get some long-winded answer about, the T formation in the 1950s.
I think in a championship game, you want the ball because of the adrenaline. Although, it's going to be funny. There's no rhyme or reason to what he does. We all know that. We've seen him. If he wins the toss in the Super Bowl,
he'll take the wind. Indoors. But I'll tell you this, I would not be surprised if the Patriots choose to return in this game for a similar reason I think they did against Pittsburgh.
Get the lead, drive down the
Pittsburgh,
field.
Pittsburgh, like Atlanta, play much better when they're ahead. If you can get them down 7-0 early,
right,
it drastically changes the landscape of the game. You saw even down 3-0. Pittsburgh seemed to worry a little bit.
You score first.
I don't think.
Did you see the graphic on the game when the Patriots lead a game at any point in the game, they win 80% of the time. That's incredible.
And that's a team that normally doesn't have the ball first.
Right. And we also know that they can come from behind because Brady's done it in the fourth quarter. You have those stats, 28 out of 40. It's probably wrong, but it sounds good. He can do that. But I believe that controlling the clock, controlling the line of scrimmage, taking it from the very beginning and marching down the field. Don't forget that team, those teams that won those back-to-back Super Bowls used to score on their first possession every time.
And we had a conversation last week about Andy Reid and what he did against the Steelers, which was kind of just, this guy's considered such a great coach, but then you see that game roll out and you just don't know. I think when you start having the same conversation about Mike Tomlin.
Oh, I do. I think it's not that you just start.
To not goal line sneak on that first down after the touchdown is overturned. And he said after the game, they asked him, do you have any opposition to the quarterback sneak? And he said, no, you have a moose under center.
All you have
duck
to do is
your head and go.
Or do the Drew Bledsoe dive, you know, where you put the football
look,
over the line.
There's more than one way to skin a cat. But there still needs to be a cat to skin the cat.
Yeah,
just go forward. You're not a good goal line team to begin with. You're giving a gift on the one. And if the game wasn't over when Brady checked out of that audible and went Jordan, if the game wasn't over when they hit the flea flicker, it was over when the Steelers didn't get a touchdown on that drive.
And the much disrespected Patriots defense probably played their best game of the year yesterday. And by the way, on Sunday.
When people ask what bend don't break means,
yeah,
you show them that drive.
That's it.
A goal line stand, I'm sure Willie McGinnis was very proud of.
That's right. And saw him on the field after the game, too.
Oh, was he actually there?
Yes, he was.
Oh, cool.
And the fact that the Patriots gave up their first 20-plus yard pass or run in the playoffs and still won the game handily.
It was in garbage time.
It was in garbage time. But point being, they have played that bend, don't break very well. And that is, give them the little underneath stuff, just tackle. One of the first things you asked, if you go back, even though everybody says, well, Belichick doesn't say anything when he talks, when he is assessing his team's performance, one of the first things he says, well, we tackled really well. We blocked really well.
And they really tackled well this week.
And I hate to say this. It is simple. I said it again last week. Football is really made at the line of scrimmage. It really does come down to blocking and tackling at the point of attack.
And look, I was worried.
He's old school. He knows it.
Early in the game, it looked like Eli Rogers was going to eat the Patriots alive. He was getting that 5-7 underneath completion, running the crossing routes. And it was working. But Belichick seems to figure out the most effective way to take that play away is not to try to stop it, because leaving a guy over the middle like that exposes you in the flats, it exposes you to the corners.
Getting tackled when he gets
well, not even that. The most effective way to take that play away is to make them not run it, because the Steelers got in a position where they couldn't take 5-7 yards over the middle because they got behind. It goes back to what we talked about at the beginning. You get them behind, it changes their makeup, it changes the mentality of the offense.
Yep.
The Steelers couldn't run their most successful play because it wouldn't have helped them.
Yeah, and again, the Patriots came out with five wides and kind of quick because, you know, it's funny, they don't situationally substitute on defense. Again, you mentioned Mike Tomlin. I'm not quite sure what's going on.
I don't know why he stayed in zone. Forget substituting. Keep the same guys out there. Go to man-to-man.
You think?
I understand. if you can't man-to-man Edelman, fine. If you can't man-to-man Bennett, fine.
I think he can.
You should be able to man-to-man Chris Hogan.
Yeah, I know. Or at least keep track of where he is on the field.
It's almost as if Mike Tomlin's roster didn't have number 15.
Yeah, well, I think I just think they have the Steelers number. I was never, ever, I was watching with a couple of guys, and they're like, you're not worried. I go, I'm not worried about this game at all.
How much did Le'Veon Bell's injury affect the outcome?
I don't think it affected the outcome. I do think that Pittsburgh needed a running game, but it was not going to change the outcome of that game. Let Pittsburgh go to sleep on that and keep Mike Tomlin as the coach and keep Ben Roethlisberger as the quarterback and all these guys, because they don't know. They don't understand how to beat Belichick. Well, the guys the week before, O'Brien, Romeo Cornell.
They figured it out. They just didn't have the players.
They figured it out. And why? You're going to tell me that the Steelers didn't look at that and go, gee, they did a really good job of that.
Twice. I counted them bringing speed rush up the middle twice in that game, the Steelers, which it should have been twice in the first two plays.
And Atlanta, I think, will be ready to do that.
Oh, Vic Beasley will be coming on center,
I think that's going to be, again, where does it start? It starts at the center and the two guards. It just does. That's football.
Make sure you tune in next week to be announced. We will break down the Patriots and the Falcons.
Do I get to actually make a prediction at some point? Will I be here next week?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
To be announced is brought to you by Snap Call Sports. Available for both iPhone and Android, the Snap Call Sports app is a chance to prove your sports knowledge, chat with both experts and fans, and win great prizes. Snap Call Sports, creating the game within the game.
No sleep till...
We're back here on the To Be Announced podcast. We are joined all the way from Long Island by Mike Zago. Hello, Mr. Zago.
How you doing? Thanks for having me.
I'm doing well. Yourself? You guys are getting swarmed with the nor'easter right now, I think, as we speak.
We are. I'm hoping the power to go out on me again for a second time today.
Well, I'll tell you this. I think a lot of Boston fans wish the power went out on them Sunday afternoon before the football game. Bruins' Claude Julien put up another stinker. They fell 5-1 to the Pittsburgh Penguins. Pittsburgh's a good team, especially offensively, but that's just a bad string of losses. 4 in a row now for the Bruins. They're starting to call for his head. They've been doing it locally for a couple months now, pretty much since the season started, as a matter of fact. Nationally, is this starting to get some attention?
Yeah, it definitely is, and rightfully so. I mean, it's not the Pittsburgh loss that bothers me. It's 4-0 shutout to the Islanders, and then their coach gets fired somehow after that. But, you know, I wouldn't pull the string on Julien yet, but they really have to decide what they are as a front office altogether, because they're caught in between being a veteran-laden group that really just wants to get in, make some noise, maybe have an upset. And you never know, you know, how momentum will take you come playoff time. But the other side of the coin is they have so many guys. If they traded some older pieces, brought back some draft picks, and really loaded up for next year, that might be a time where you say, let's let Claude Julien go, bring in someone to motivate the younger players, and really make a future push. So I don't know if they can decide this too quickly, and I can't really blame them for not having made a decision yet.
My issue with it is they have more games in hand than anybody else. They've played more games than anybody in the Eastern Conference, and they're barely hanging on to a playoff spot as it stands. Shouldn't the front office realize playoffs isn't happening this year?
I think the front office knows pretty much where they're at. They're not going to host a playoff series, probably. But, you know, that said, in hockey, momentum going in late matters. If you rattle off 5 out of 7 wins as they're going into the playoffs, even if they sneak in as a 7 or 8 seed, you know, can they beat Columbus in a series? Maybe. They, you know, if you get the right matchup, you could start moving forward. And if these old legs really get moving, they could make a deep run just like anybody else could. So I don't know if I would make a decision on the coach until after the year, because I just don't think you're gaining enough to offset the possibility that they have a miracle run in them.
How much of this, and it's easy to blame the coach when your team isn't playing well, but how much of this is the coach? You have guys like Zdeno Chara, who just shouldn't be on the ice anymore. He's too old. He can't do it. I don't want to call him bad because he's been such a great player, but he's clearly a liability. Tuukka Rask checks out of the game because he has to go see the nurse because his tummy's bothering him. How much of this is on Claude? And even if it's not on him, would firing him help?
You know, what's disappointing for their team is not that he can't get the players motivated, but they have plenty of veteran leadership in that locker room to get the young guys going. And it just really hasn't clicked. And
from the sound of reports around here, it sounds like he's lost the locker room.
Yeah, it sounds like they're caught between two worlds. It's just as though Claude wants this to be a team led by the veterans, and the front office is already gearing up towards the future with their young picks and trying to develop their talent. And those two things just aren't going to go together. So I wouldn't blame them if they moved on, but I think it's a more of an off-season kind of thing. Really be on the same page with everybody, be able to move some guy, bring in younger talent, and really revitalize the culture there.
All right, Mike, well, we have you on the phone. We're going to play a little game kind of in the spirit of coach firing and people losing their jobs here. Which coach in each sport has the most job security or should be or will be the next one fired? We'll start in hockey. I think you know where I'm going to start. I don't think Claude is the whole issue. They've got some issues in their noggins. The Bruins do, but the best way to shake that up is to axe the guy at the head. I think Claude should be the next one gone and is the next one gone. If you're going to fire any NHL coach as it stands today, who would it be?
I'm more disappointed in Lindy Ruff in Dallas than I am in Claude Julien in Boston. I thought last year that team had so much potential offensively, and they really did realize the potential too. They were tops in the league in scoring, and you know their defense was a liability. But this year, he's got two competent goalies. He's got some star power there in Ben and Sagan, and they are just bad. Their offense is falling apart too. I don't know what it is. They need some new personnel, but you know he's had troubles in the past too, and at some prior stints. So I'm not sure he's the guy. Maybe they need a younger coach in there to really get somebody motivated, but you know he would be very much on the hot seat for me.
If there's a center point between our two, perhaps Tyler Sagan is a bit of a coach killer. Meanwhile, we go on. It's tough with the NFL this time of year because a lot of moves were just made. But which coach maybe that was retained or even extended should have gotten axed?
Yeah, it's early. But I was very surprised that John Fox is going to come back for next year, especially with all the question marks the Bears have right now. They don't know who their quarterback is going to be. They really don't have much of an identity on offense. You know, they couldn't even find a backup quarterback that was really too competent this year. So there are a whole lot of question marks. Their defense has some young pieces. I just see him as more of a guy that if you have an established team who needs some leadership going into the playoffs, a guy that's been there before, I can understand bringing him in. For a team that's trying to get younger, I'm not sure he's the guy. I would get a younger coach there, try to build together and really get something else going, because Chicago football should just be better than they are.
I'm going to go with Marvin Lewis, the Cincinnati Bengals. This guy is about 4 or 5 years beyond where he should be. That playoff meltdown last year against Pittsburgh was unacceptable. The guy has lost control of his team, his locker room, for the past 2 or 3 years. Extending him just extends the futility that's going on in Cincinnati. That team continues to move further and further away from a playoff spot, a team that really was at the top of the conference. On to the NBA, sure. Middle of the season, some teams starting to talk about what coaches might be on the block. I'm going to go with Jason Kidd in Milwaukee. Look, that team has a lot of young talent. Kidd, for the great point guard he was, not much of a coach.
Yeah, I haven't seen much X's and O's stuff that I love from him. But that said, they haven't had Chris Middleton yet this year. He's supposed to come back a little after the All-Star break. I'd like to see what they can do with another piece, because between him, Parker, and Giannis, that team is dangerous. And what I do like about Kidd, if you're going to move forward with Antetokounmpo being sort of a point forward, he can really help his development passing the ball. He's played a lot of point guard this year. Then eventually, again, you have an identity. You can go get a 3-and-D type point guard to sit in the corner and hit shots, kind of like Derek Fisher did with Kobe Bryant. And you have something going there. So I can understand why they want him to mentor their best player. And as Antetokounmpo becomes, you know, top 5-10 at least talent in the NBA, I don't know if you want to ruin that development just yet. But for me, Frank Vogel to me in Orlando just hasn't shown any hold over his team. They went and got some good pieces. They have Serge Ibaka now. They got Bismack Biyombo, who in the playoffs was someone people were talking about being a legitimate starting center, maybe a future star. And you haven't heard his name one time in Orlando. They drafted Efrid Payton early. He's put up okay numbers, hasn't really commanded the offense yet, can't shoot the ball very much. But, you know, in Indiana, he had his teams go to the conference finals regularly, and he didn't have a ton of talent there either. So I kind of just thought, this should at least be a playoff team. And if they're on the outside looking in like this, he just hasn't. He needs to go on a run quickly, or his name will be coming up at least soon.
And finally, it's a little tougher because there's just been so much movement with the offseason, but in baseball, manager, executive, whoever. I had a couple, both from the AL East. I think Buck Showalter, after the inability he showed in the wild card game not to go to his closer in that situation. Maybe management should take a long, hard look at him, because middle market teams like the Orioles are not going to have huge windows. If he's not the guy, you need to establish that right away. The other one's Joe Girardi in New York. Since winning that World Series in 09, that team has hovered right around 500. They've made a couple playoff appearances, but, you know, the Yankees are the Yankees. It used to be if you don't win there year in and year out, you're out the door, and maybe that's starting to slip, but I think Giardi may be kind of floating along on some extra lives here.
I think, you know, when he came to New York, I've been a Yankee fan since I was a kid. I always thought he was more of the kind of coach that could motivate young talent rather than taking a team over the top and getting to them the World Series. Now, ironically, they did have some older players when they did win in 2009, so he was a benefit of that. But I do like Girardi with this new school Yankee feel. I like the way Girardi handles young kids and gets them ready. I think you'll see him. I would say he would get extended before he would get fired. I think they want to see him through with the Aaron Judges of the world. Obviously, Gary Sanchez. They just got Frazier from Cleveland. I think they have a plan in place to get back to the late 90s Yankees. And to do that, they need these kids to flourish. And, you know, changing environments is a tough way to do that. Now, a guy on the flip side that I think has underperformed is Terry Collins in New York. I mean, that team had, they were in the World Series. They had no reason to believe that they couldn't get back there the following year. But he just makes some boneheaded decisions sometimes that I just can't get behind. You know, this is a coach that had a Gold Glove center fielder in Juan Lagares, and he's riding the bench. And I mean, I understand the guy doesn't hit very well, but you got to make some smart decisions that if you're going to be a team with a dominant staff and you want to play in defense, you probably should have your center fielder in there that can track down the balls. Again, they're talking about bringing David Wright back to start this year over Reyes, who had a good stint with them last year. It's just his day-to-day decision-making that really makes me roll my eyes more often than not. If they get off to a slow start this year, you're going to hear his name rumbling big time.
All right, Mike Zago, GameCaster for Snap Call Sports. Thank you for joining us on To Be Announced. We'll be talking to you again very soon.
Thanks a lot, Alex.
To Be Announced is brought to you by Snap Call Sports. Available for both iPhone and Android, the Snap Call Sports app is a chance to prove your sports knowledge, chat with both experts and fans, and win great prizes. Snap Call Sports, creating the game within the game.
And welcome back to To Be Announced. Still a way off. Conference play getting kicked in here in college basketball. I know everybody wants to wait till conference championship week to start talking, but I saw something today. Kind of caught my eye. Got to get into it. Grayson Allen back in the news. Now, he didn't do anything this time. Supposedly. He got in a little bit of a scrape with another player. Seems like it was 50-50, but I'm not a huge Grayson Allen fan. I don't think he's that good to begin with. And it seems like now he may be a liability for Duke to have him on the court. If he's going to be getting into scrums with other players, you got to wonder at what point it becomes a distraction. Now, Jimmy, you've been a basketball guy for a long time. You saw
I've been a lot of things for a long time, I just want to say. Sorry.
We're starting to get the Christian Laettner comparisons. Justified?
Oh, Christian Laettner was a far better player. Christian Laettner was a very good basketball player. I don't think Grayson Allen's a very good basketball player. But he plays a role on a team for a great coach, Mike Krzyzewski. He plays the role of that enforcer that I'm going to go back to Jim Luskatov, who used to play that role for Red Auerbach and the Celtics in the 60s. And he would come in and he would hard foul a guy and it would get in their head and they'd be afraid to come into the lane again. And if that's the role that Krzyzewski is using for this kind of player, there's a play in that. However, I think this kid's got a little over the line on that dirty part versus just a hard foul.
But he's not hard fouling guys in the lane. He's tripping dudes at half court.
Yeah, well, he's being a Kenny Lintzman. He's being a rat. He's being a nudge. He's being under your skin. He's doing exactly what his coach wants him to do, which is to get people crazy about him.
Does this tarnish? But it's Coach K. He's supposedly above all this. He's supposedly this great student of the game. He wants everything done the right way. And it seems out of character for Coach K to support a player like this.
I've actually seen Coach K out of character. And he can be a little bit of a
curmudgeon.
He's a little bit young for a curmudgeon, but certainly can act that way. There's a four-letter word that I could use that begins with a J and ends with a K, but it just doesn't feel. It's also a type of cooking in Jamaica. How's that? Without actually saying the word, he can be. And I've had a personal dealing with the guy where, you know what? He was a bit of a jerk. I'm going to say it now. No one's listening. No, I'm only kidding. We have fun on this show.
Great promotion for TV Announced, brought to you by SnapCall.
That's right. We're going to make people listen to it. It's a fun thing. So, point being, he's playing a role. He's getting under the skin of the other team. It's a good type of player to have on your roster. However, if he starts to, what you're saying, become a distraction to his own team, then that's when you got to sit him down.
I've seen some good Duke teams, and I've been following college basketball pretty closely for about 10, 15 years. I've seen some. I don't remember. Jim Boeheim has those players that you just hate, because Jim Boeheim, I don't like Jim Boeheim.
Really?
But I covered him for...
Coach K and Jim Boeheim, two Hall of Fame coaches.
But here's the thing. I like Coach K. I love the way he runs his team. That's why this gets to me so much.
Right.
It seems out of character. I covered Jim Boeheim for 4 years when I was working up at ESPN Radio in Ithaca. He's the tossing the coat and the going off on the media and having people in his press conference. There are two people I've ever seen stalk a press conference with people just to applaud. Jim Boeheim and Donald Trump. And that says it all. But Coach K is such a student of the game. He's such a historian. He just has this aura about him. To have this kind of guy on his roster, and he had a chance maybe to put the kibosh on it with the indefinite suspension. And I said, oh, Grayson Allen's career at Duke might be over. He suspended him for one game. It doesn't seem right to me. This shouldn't be, this is such an NBA thing.
But
college basketball is supposed to be so above this.
It's a farce. College basketball right now is a farce. The whole one-and-done thing has soured me on the game. And,
But that's what, here you have a kid who's probably going to stay 4 years. He's staying for 3 years. He's going to stay for four.
Great, let him graduate. That's awesome.
He's supposedly great with all these fundamentals, but then he's out here just tripping guys and talking smack at people he shouldn't be and throwing...
How do you do that with his pinky on purpose?
Throwing hissy fits on the bench. Well, that wasn't on him, but it's gotten to the point where now other players are starting to go at him because they don't want him to come at them first.
Yeah, well, again, then he's doing his job, and that's why Coach K only suspended him for a game, because he wants to use him, and he knows the role that that kid can play. And, you know, what Coach K is still about winning. He just is.
It's getting some attention now. It'll be interesting to see when March Madness comes if Grayson still has the cojones, the grapes, to keep going after guys like this on national television. That's going to do it for us. I'd like to thank Jimmy Young. I'd like to thank Mike Zago. You can follow us on Twitter at TBA Podcast. We're on SoundCloud as well. Hope you'll join us next week. We'll break down the Super Bowl, have some more guests on. It'll be a good time. One more time, To Be Announced is brought to you by SnapCall Sports. Download it for the iPhone or Android. Creating the game within the game, chat with fans and experts, answer some questions, win some prizes. It's a whole lot of fun. I am Alex Barth. This was To Be Announced. Thanks for listening.